Welcome to our Supersize Friday Show. We supersized at the Friday Show this week. Second hour, Jimmy Akin will be here. We're going to talk with kids, all kids' questions. So if you are a kid or if you have a kid with a question about the Catholic faith, any question at all will be welcome, and Jimmy will handle those calls next hour. Maybe towards the end of this hour, you might want to start getting on the line if you like. It's good for us if you do, because we're ready to go right from the get when we start that second hour. This hour, we talk about beauty, and our guest today says beauty is essential to the formation of the soul. And the formation of the soul is about the most important thing you can do. So spending some time talking about beauty, talking about its lack, and what is truly beautiful and what is pretending to be beautiful, all those things are important for us. Our guest is Elizabeth Kelly. She's the author of several books, including Jesus Approaches, which is a book about women in the New Testament and their encounters with Christ. It's the foundation of an 8-week Bible study for women now that's happening all around the country. She's also the professor of Catholic studies at the University of St. Thomas. Elizabeth Kelly, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Beauty, you said to me, is essential to the formation of the soul. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Sure. We could ask the question simply, why do we have taste buds? Why did God bother? You know, is it only because he wants to keep us from eating something rancid? Or poison,
yeah.
Or is there more to it in that it is an invitation to taste in, to delight in the goodness of his creation? And furthermore, to participate in the great act of creation when we cook, if we're good cooks, for example. I'm not a great cook, but other people could say that. So, or when we feed the poor. I mean, all of these are ways that we participate through that particular sense in God's goodness, his abundance. Beauty of any variety is always evidence of God's abundance, because he didn't have to bother, but he did.
What a fascinating thing. I had never thought about that, about taste buds. That's a very helpful way to get into it. But our eyes, too.
There's
a way in which, I mean, you could say, well, you know, they evolved to keep us safe and help us hunt prey. But what they are, in fact, is a way to appreciate creation.
Certainly. Think of all the verses, especially in the Psalms, which are a reflection on a desire to see your face. I seek your face. Your face do I seek. We're created in his image and his likeness. The emphasis on sight and its theological implications, and developing the ability to see the beautiful are, you know, endless. You know, we could talk for weeks on that particular piece. Go ahead.
I do have a sense, and I wonder if you share the sense, that if you ask people about the Catholic Church and the history of the Catholic Church, even if they hate the Catholic Church, one of the things they will grudgingly say is, well, of course, there's a lot of great music and wonderful art and beautiful churches, even though those people are horrible. So as a Catholic, you really have – I mean, this is an important thing to claim as part of Catholic identity, is a love for beauty.
Absolutely. And an understanding that beauty is a mode of conversion, a very powerful mode of conversion when wielded properly. And for example, I'm sitting here looking at my book on the Basilica of St. Francis of Assisi here in my living room. And in that basilica alone, the different artists that the church brought together and then funded, you know, supported, patronized, resulted in a huge movement forward in terms of artistic expression, moving from the Byzantine, which was much more flat, to I'm forgetting the names of the famous people who participated in the Basilica at Assisi, but into something that was much more living and three-dimensional. So it not only was the church a nurturing mother for many of the great artists of our time since the year 2000, but it fostered great developments. I mean, you could really put some of those in the pocket of the Catholic Church, because without her support, who knows how long it would have taken for those developments to evolve.
Or you think of polyphony in music. It didn't exist.
And
here it's maybe the greatest thing ever invented by humans. I mean, I don't know how you rank those things, but polyphonic music is world transforming.
Right. It's right up there with, you know, penicillin and washing your hands and, you know, things like that.
Who invented washing your hands? That was a good invention.
I think it was a nurse who figured out that
fair enough.
You had to wash your hands before surgery. That helped.
Yes. Okay. So, however, we can have a kind of approach to beauty now that is fully secularized, I suppose. That maybe in the ages of faith, there was an idea that it was the church that was beautiful, that it was church music that was beautiful for a reason, because Christ is beautiful and because what Christ brings into the world is the beauty of God. But now we have a kind of secularization of beauty.
Yeah, it's been hijacked, no question. And that's all the more reason that it's really important for us to go back to some of the fundamental principles about beauty. You know, Aquinas saying that the beautiful is the good made visible. You know, some of these very classic approaches to beauty that were developed, you know, through the Greeks and then appropriated by the church, and really formed her mind on the importance of beauty. Think of all the great saints that expressed conversion stories because of something beautiful that they encountered.
Right. Indeed. Yeah. But there's a kind of, you don't know what the world will look back and say 500 years from now, but it's hard to imagine a world 500 years from now, if it has any sense, looking back on modernism and the modernist movements in art as anything other than a vacation from beauty, as a timeout.
Right. A sort of rebellion. It's kind of like a 2-year-old in their high chair smashing their hands against the tray. You know, I want, you know, having a little sort of artistic tantrum. And yet it's so transcendent. And if the theologians are right, that truth and goodness and beauty come together as a package, that if we cling to the truth that we know, beauty will be rescued along with it.
We're talking beauty today with Elizabeth Kelly, a Catholic author and I should say also singer. We didn't mention that, but maybe we'll talk about your experience of beauty through music. But and also a professor of Catholic Studies at the University of St. Thomas. 888-318-7884 is our number. If you'd like to talk with Elizabeth Kelly, 888-318-7884. And before I ever even gave that number out, Isaiah from Nebraska listening on Spirit Catholic Radio called. So I don't know what that is. Isaiah, do you have the number memorized or how did you do that?
I listen to you guys a lot. I love it. So
okay.
Anytime I have to. Yeah. So thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Happy to.
My question, is beauty, I've heard this said, is beauty objective, and how do we quantify that, how do we measure it, and then how do we incorporate that into our liturgy, into the Mass, into everything? So.
It depends on who you ask, I suppose, in terms of what those objective standards would be. I certainly do think that it is appropriate to lean upon the great traditions of classical art that imply that beauty is order. that something that's well proportioned is a reflection of beauty. This is true in math. It's true in the sciences. It's true in physics and so on and so forth. So I do think that there are ways that we can say this is beautiful and that is not, or is a distortion, or it falls short of a kind of classical standard. Now, having said that, what, you know, the other part of your question was, you know, what do we do with that? There's such a big move, for example, to bring back Gregorian chant into churches and to forever retire the guitar mass, you know, and that kind of thing. I think that we could make the argument that as we grow, as we mature in faith, we are brought to a higher and higher place. I'm forgetting where it is in the Gospels, but the invitation of someone to come up to a higher place at the table. I think that this is always the movement of God, that he's always taking us from the basic to the more sophisticated, even in our theology, even in the tradition of the church. So to begin with one idea of something that beauty is, and as we mature and grow and pray and encounter Christ in the reality of the sacraments, it's not at all uncommon that our idea of what is beautiful and what draws us to the transcendent also grows and matures.
Isaiah, what do you make of that?
That's really wonderful. I appreciate that. And I think as I definitely agree with you that the sense of beauty, I don't know, to me it seems like it always kind of just converges back onto these transcendent things, the things you find in mass, Gregorian chant, those sorts of things. So I really appreciate mm-hmm. that. That's a great answer.
Okay, thank mm-hmm. you. Thank you very much, Isaiah, for that beautiful call. That's so impressive that he was able to dial without us giving out the number. well, it is 888-31-TRUTH. So sometimes people, yeah, it might just go in the brain. But I do, you know, I keep the phone number written in front of me at all times because I will start and I will forget halfway through, even after all this time of giving out that number. So good for you, Isaiah. We're talking beauty. Elizabeth Kelly is our guest. You can find all about her at lizk.org, and if you are a woman who would like to search in the New Testament for encounter with Christ and learn from the example of the women of the New Testament, then you can find out there at lizk.org about her retreats and about her wonderful book on women's encounters with Jesus in the New Testament, and that's called Jesus Approaches. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Before I let you go, I want you to know everything at shop.catholic.com remains on sale. It hasn't ended yet. I don't know when it is going to end, but I feel it coming. If you go to shop.catholic.com, you put in the promo code CALIVE18 at checkout, 20% off almost everything there. Hundreds of DVDs, CDs, MP3s, eBooks, and much more. Visit shop.catholic.com, begin saving. Don't forget to enter that promo code CALIVE18.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I would describe myself as a revert, and ever since I came back to a practice of my faith, I started praying the rosary, going to even daily mass, God has led me on an amazing journey and used me in a lot of incredible ways that I never dreamed would have been possible, and I'm just so grateful to God for all of his gifts and blessings in my life.
Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, tomorrow, noon Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Oh, Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, Friday edition. So happy to have you here with us. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Elizabeth Kelly, who is a professor of Catholic Studies at the University of St. Thomas. And we're talking beauty today. I wonder if you would agree with the proposition that the Catholic Church was really, really good at beauty, and maybe because of a little bit of taking in too much from the modern period, got less good at beauty, but there's a kind of recovery going on now.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate to say. My husband is an architect, and one of the things that he has been doing a great deal of is resurrecting chapels and churches that got hijacked by very bad art, and making them Catholic again, right down to, you know, putting marble back into the altarpiece and, you know, things that.
Right.
And so the fact that he even has that work is kind of evidence of precisely what you say. I think people do want to reclaim a much more grounded understanding of beauty as it relates to the liturgy.
But it's a long work, though. It's not a short work, because if you get a generation or two, or maybe what we have is four or five generations who have been kind of reduced in their appreciation of beauty, because mm-hmm. what has been sold, you know, in the pop culture is really usually kind of an imitation of beauty, or you know, it's catchy more than it's beautiful. And so then we start to think, well, catchy music is beautiful. We should have more catchy music at, you know, just as an example, at church, mm-hmm. or we should have more catchy art at church, and not something that's more meditative or profound. But you can't just turn that around in a minute. You have to develop an appreciation for beauty.
Well, exactly. And precisely why I think it's so important to begin with your children, to begin forming in them the tools with which they will be able to appreciate and discern the beautiful from the ugly, the sacred from the profane.
Yeah. Yeah. That. And how do you have any ideas about that? About, I mean, what? So say I'm a parent, I'm listening, I have children, and I think that is true. I want their soul to be formed by beauty. Mm-hmm. How do I go about that?
I think I had a really interesting interview with a former student. His name is Stephen Moss, and he's now a toy maker. And one of the things that he did was to, I didn't know that there used to be Catholic Legos, but apparently there were.
And then they
fell out of fashion, and he has brought them back. And one of the things he talks about, which I think is so important, is he says, children, you know, what we play, we often become. Think about how many little boys played Mass who later became priests,
right.
You know. And so he has, you know, ordained, I put that in quote marks, 2,000 Lego priests over the last, you know, however many years. And just the idea of, like, wouldn't it be great if he heard a story of a vocation that started with one of his Catholic Lego sets?
Ooh,
now, you know, all of this just to say that as hard as it is, I know what I'm asking when I say this. You have to get your kids off and away from screens. It is essential to forming their brain. Like, technically, this is like a literal neurological kind of study, that their brains are formed in a different way when they're playing with dirt versus when they're playing with something that just makes a funny noise or a loud sound or does the work for them. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense, actually. You know, it's funny because I was thinking you might say something about exposing your children to Gregorian chant or poetry or something, which I'm sure is all fine. But the truth
Absolutely.
Is there's nothing more beautiful than nature, and it's the separation
right.
from nature that might be limiting our appreciation of beauty.
Yeah, I do think that there's something so fundamental about that, you know, playing with dirt and rocks
right.
as a kid, that really can't be replaced. And yes, take your kids to the symphony. Take them to museums, let them pick out their favorite piece and then have them invite them to tell you why they like it. Let them begin to gather vocabulary to express their own encounter with the beautiful, whether it's in music or art or in acting, taking to the plays. We have so much great theater in Minneapolis, you know, in the children's theater and this kind of thing. There are lots of different ways that you can pursue the arts in a very very conscious and thoughtful way. But even more than that, all of beauty has something to do with God's creativity. And so the ways that you can invite your child into creative acts versus entertaining them or keeping them distracted, yeah, this is very fundamental formation for appreciating beauty as they grow. Being able to identify it, engage it, and experience it as a transcendental.
Amen. 888-318-7884. The number. We're talking about beauty with Elizabeth Kelly. We go now to Brandon in Texas, listening on 89.7 FM. Brandon, your question for Elizabeth Kelly.
Hey, guys. Before I ask my question, I had a comment on something y'all just said. My parish was built in the 50s, and it used to be whitewashed on the inside and just plain white. And about 10 years ago, we had a renovation. Now over the altar is a beautiful mural of St. Anne, and the whole church has been redone. So in that essence, I do agree with what y'all said. I think beauty's coming back.
Oh, wonderful to hear it, Brandon. Thank you. That's a wonderful thing to hear.
Yeah, but my question is, so I'm an organist for my parish, and I was wondering what ways can I add beauty back to the Mass? Is there some music, suggestions you might have? What can I do?
Well, God bless you for being an organist. It's sort of a lost art form. So thank you for that. In what sense do you mean to bring beauty back? You mean through particular pieces or just the organ in general? Or do you play every weekend or just once in a while? Or
no, I play every weekend, I guess.
Okay.
What's become very common in most every parish where I'm at is the typical four hymn sandwich, where it's basic hymns,
yes,
and I'm just looking, yes, for suggestions and ideas to get out of that pattern.
Right. I think there are two things that you could do probably without even needing anyone's permission right off the top of the bat, and that is the prelude time. You could introduce a little bit more sophisticated pieces while people are getting recollected for Mass. You could choose pieces while people are getting recollected for Mass that have a particularly contemplative quality to them. And then as people are exiting Mass, we have a really fine organist musicians at my church, and I am always anticipating, waiting for the delightful celebratory hymn that they will play as we're going out into the world. And so those are two things you could be very conscious about, that the prelude would reflect people's desire to recollect themselves well to enter into the Mass, and that they would exit with joy, with exuberance, with a sense of mission, you know, the kind of marching tunes that send us out into the street feeling stronger and more united. So that's one thing you could do before and after. And then I think it's never a bad idea to teach a song that people don't know, to break out of the four-tune sandwich or whatever you called it. I loved that. That was great. Or also to change things up, have a cantor sing the verse, have the whole church sing the chorus, you know, maybe make a few little tweaks like that. And if they're minor enough without being completely disruptive, I think that they invite people to experience, they wake people up a little. Does that make sense? This is something new. This is something refreshing. It kind of wakes them up. And then bit by bit, you can introduce maybe other modes of of music, maybe have some Gregorian chant playing as people are entering or while they're waiting for confession, things like that.
Brandon?
I don't know if that helps. That's a great question, but.
Your follow up, Brandon?
Yes. That helps me. Thank you.
Are you still there, Brandon? You didn't go, did you?
Yes, I'm still here.
I want to make another suggestion because here in California we have a magnificent institute founded by the Archbishop of San Francisco. It's called the Benedict the 16th Institute. You should look that
up. Oh, yeah.
The Benedict the 16th Institute for Catholic Art and Music, I believe, is the full title. You're going to find all kinds of helpful stuff there, Brandon. And
that's a great tip. They have, in fact, I don't know if it's weekly or monthly, Catholic Arts Today.
Right.
That writes lots of articles precisely addressing that kind of question.
Great
source.
Thank you. Look that up, Brandon, the Benedict XVI Institute. We'll talk more about beauty when we come right back with Elizabeth Kelly on Catholic Answers Live.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture's moral center continues to fly apart and with every form of deviance publicly aired and celebrated, we have no choice but to equip our kids to understand about such issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. Silence can no longer be an option. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging onto the shop at Catholic.com.
Looking for the best and solid Catholic resources that can answer your questions on all things Catholic? Looking for books, audio, and DVDs by the top Catholic thinkers and speakers on the planet today? Stop in today and visit the shop at Catholic.com. All of our resources are time-tested, apologist-vetted, and trustworthy and faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. There's no better source for solid Catholic resources anywhere on the Internet. When you're shopping for good Catholic books, CD, DVDs, and more, turn to someone you can trust. Visit the shop at Catholic.com today. That's shop.catholic.com.
One of the obvious outward signs of the Catholic Church is beauty, it's been so consistent and persistent down through the centuries that Catholics are both attracted to beauty and are innovators in making beautiful things, in finding new paths of beauty in the world. And yet, you can wonder: are we faithful to that as a central tradition of the Church? It's important that we are faithful to it because beauty is one of the primary ways, one of the three main paths, as a certain bishop likes to say. The three main paths to God, goodness and truth and beauty, are all pathways to God. And we maybe over the last 100 years or so have been somewhat neglectful in the area of beauty. And so that's what we're discussing today with Elizabeth Kelly. Elizabeth Kelly, you can find her at lizk.org. She's a professor of Catholic studies at the University of St. Thomas. And she has several books. And the one I just want to keep mentioning is Jesus Approaches, because it's a book about women in the New Testament encountering Jesus, and you have a Bible study connected with that, Elizabeth.
Yes, 8 weeks. About 700 women have gone through it so far, and we're now starting to take it out to other archdioceses. So look for that if you're if you're interested in a study.
And again, all that is available at lizk.org. That's where you can find her. We go now to Jim in Indiana. Jim, thanks for listening. Your question for Elizabeth Kelly.
Hi, Cy and Elizabeth. It's great to be on the show. I listen to you guys all the time.
Well, thank you.
I had a question and a comment, I guess. My comment is that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And as a Catholic convert of a few years back, I want to bring up that I know that Gregorian chant, for example, and Latin masses are beautiful to old-time Catholics, but I can just about guarantee if I want to evangelize a Protestant, they will not find either of those things beautiful, and they will be very distracting to them.
First of all, are you calling us old-time Catholics? But fair enough. A fair enough point. What about music as an evangelizing thing, Elizabeth?
Well, I mean, I would take just a little bit of an issue with it in that many of our young seminarians and our young Catholic studies students are far more into the Latin Mass than I ever was.
Yes.
That,
right.
That young people are just devouring it. They want this deep tradition even more than I have ever experienced. And secondly, I know a number of people who were converted through Gregorian chant from Protestant circles, so I'm not sure that it wouldn't necessarily appeal to folks. And I'm thinking, even at my own wedding mass, I had a number of Protestant friends who came and had not heard Gregorian chant, and we had that in our ceremony, and it was their favorite part. So I wouldn't sell it too short, but... in terms of your question about bringing modern music into the church, what do you mean when you say modern or contemporary music? Like, are you talking about Arvo Pärt, or are you talking about like pop music, or?
Well, it's contemporary Christian music. It's the kind of music that you hear praise and worship.
Yeah.
In all praise of the and worship.
K-Love. K-Love music.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
right.
I mean, at my parish, in fact, on 7:30 on Sunday night and Wednesday night, they have a praise and worship mass format. So I think it is pretty widely experienced, but maybe not in, where are you, in Indiana? I know that some people really frown upon that, but I think you're right. I think especially young people who are still forming themselves and still being formed in terms of truth, beauty, and goodness, do find the popular praise and worship music to be a tremendous vehicle for them to experience God's love. So I'm not opposed to that, not even remotely opposed to that. I do think that it needs to have its place. I don't know if that's helpful.
Jim, what do you make of that?
Yeah, that's good. That's what I like to hear. It doesn't seem to be very prevalent around here. Again, I did go to one recently that was at a 5:30 mass on Sunday, and as long as they do at least that much, that's okay. I agree.
I think that's pretty common, that the 5 or 5:30 mass on Sunday in many parishes is the life teen mass or the teen mass or the praise and worship mass. I'm sure it's not the case everywhere, but we do have. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
You raise a really good point in that. I mean, I do think that God meets us exactly where we are in all of the visions of the Madonna as she has appeared to various countries and cultures throughout the world. She has never appeared and spoken in Greek or Latin or Hebrew. She has spoken in the language that the visionary would understand. So of course she's not going to come and start speaking canonical Latin to a little child, you know, in the African plains. He wouldn't understand that. So I do think it's important that we recognize where people are, and we invite them into dialogue right where they are. And there's certainly a place for that, and it's important to do that.
Jim, thank you very, very much for that call. I do the opposite of what Jim said. It has to be considered too, that there is music that is not beautiful. There is music that is not adequately beautiful for the celebration of the Mass.
Yeah.
So it's not to say that, well, just any old thing is beautiful.
Right. And I do think he was talking about very specifically worship music. He wasn't talking about, you know, I don't know. I don't even know what an example of something unbeautiful would be, but I know what you mean. Yeah.
I was going to name some, but I thought better of it. I held myself.
You'll get in trouble with some fans.
It's interesting that you mentioned Arvo Pärt, a composer who's having a great deal of influence in Catholic circles. He himself is an Orthodox composer. And I'm taking this opportunity now to mention that we have an interview that we did for Catholic Answers Focus, our podcast. It'll air next Wednesday. And it's with the composer Frank LaRocca, a Catholic composer, who talks about the influence of Arvo Pärt and others, and about this new movement. And so when people say, well, it can't all be Gregorian chant, some of the contemporary composers like Frank LaRocca, like Arvo Pärt, are making contemporary music that is steeped in that old music, but it is not a pastiche of it. It is not just a rehashing. It's new and exciting, and I wish more people would know about it, and I hope everyone will listen to Catholic Answers Focus next week, because we're going to share some music on it, and we're going to talk about music and beauty with Frank LaRocca. And he's got a brand new Mass. It's called Mass of the Americas, and it's going to premiere December 8th at the Cathedral in San Francisco. And he takes some very what you might call lowbrow music and mixes it in there, you know, things that are traditional little Mexican songs or mariachi. So I'm not saying that to be insulting. I just mean it's not usually thought of as, you know, the high Mass for the high altar stuff.
Sure.
But he mixes it in new and exciting ways. And I just wish more people would know about the really beautiful things going on in Catholic and Orthodox circles as far as new music that still has the power of the old music. Rich in Houston, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio, you are next up with Elizabeth Kelly. Your question, please.
Well, hello there. Wouldn't say that it's exactly a question, by the way.
Okay.
I do appreciate your show that you have going today. I do have a quick comment, and it's that I've noticed that, you know, sometimes when you go into some churches, the art that does exist on the churches and the ceilings and the like, it seems to take a person to another place, a better place. To me, it seems like it helps a person to get to a higher spiritual place, I guess one might say, that I guess the plain churches, I think they don't do quite so well when it comes to that. But one thing I wanted to point out is I lived in Wisconsin for 50 of my years that I've been alive. I'm 58 now. And when my wife and myself moved down here to Texas, I'm not sure how I found out about this, but found out there's something that is colloquial, or however one would say that word, known as the Painted Churches of Texas. And I do not know if either one of you have ever heard of them.
I have not.
One can look them up and they online. And if I recall correctly, there is even like an hour-long show that had been produced, and I think it was put on PBS. Look up Painted Churches of Texas, and there's approximately 11 churches, most of which are Catholic. And they're absolutely beautiful. My wife and myself had the opportunity to, there's a small town, basically halfway between Houston and, San Antonio. It's called Schulenburg, Texas. And they have four of the painted churches, in that area. And, as it turns out, a couple of years ago, we had the opportunity to take a tour there because the local Chamber of Commerce in Schulenburg actually does tours of these Catholic churches in that small area. And I am not an expert by any means on beauty, but I have to tell you this. They were stunning in their beauty.
I have to say, I looked them up while you were talking, Rich.
Yeah, me too. They are.
And those are beautiful. Yeah, you don't have to be an expert to see. Those are beautiful. Those are really something beautiful. Rich, thank you so much for that. Any comment on that, Liz?
Oh, well, just looking at this website, I think it's very interesting because it seems to focus this project of the painted churches, focuses on 19th century Czech and German immigrants. And I think that flavor just in the few images I'm seeing here is very apparent. And again, the abundance of God, the way that he speaks to us through beauty, that we take it culturally, we take it as a country, we take it as, you know, a community, and we place our own stamp on it. We participate. It's an invitation to participate in God's creative act of creating beauty, creating wonder, creating awe.
It's funny in the history of the United States, of Catholicism here in the United States, many people know the history of the Italians and the Irish coming over, but when the Germans came over and the Czechs came over, they brought church building with them, and they built places like Mundelein in the Midwest there. And there's something so beautiful about those German and Czech and Eastern European churches. And it's a little told story. So I'm really glad that we got that call and we got to see those.
Yes. Look it up.
We got to take a break. While I send you off to this break, I'll remind you that our free ebook remains available on our Facebook page. If you go to Catholic Answers on Facebook, you can get Demons, Deliverance, and Discernment, our best-selling book on demons, right now for free. We just want you to have it. There's no gimmick. There's nothing. We just give this stuff away for free because, well, we have a lot of resources here and we want to share them. Demons, Deliverance, and Discernment, free ebook right now on our Facebook page. Not at Catholic.com, but you go to Facebook, you go to the Catholic Answers Facebook page, and you get your free ebook there.
This is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Thank you for listening to Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
First, I love the show, but I just wanted to call to encourage that previous caller who had called about the Latin Mass and just encourage him to keep giving it a try and especially try to meet some folks outdoors and his wife meet some people, and that does make that experience so much better. And thank you for your historical background, and it was a good interpretation of the history.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. 2 hours of great Catholic radio today because we have a couple of great guests and little children next hour. If you're 15 or under and you'd like to call and get your question answered, well, probably now's the time to start dialing. Well, make sure you check with mom or dad if you're a minor, and 888-318-7884 is the number. Jimmy Akin will be taking questions from the younger set for the entire final hour of our work week next hour. Again, 888-318-7884, and we would love to get your call if you're young and you got a question about the Catholic faith. And by the way, you don't have to be Catholic to call. You just got to have your parents' permission. Anybody can call. Let's go to Tyler in Illinois, listening to EWTN on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Tyler, your question for Elizabeth Kelly.
Good evening. Thank you, guys. Oh, hello.
Go ahead. Yeah, we got you, Tyler. Go ahead.
Hey, Good evening. Thanks for taking my call. And I just want to share before I get started, I'm a Protestant going through RCIA right now.
Hey, praise God.
It's great. It's really wonderful. But one of the reasons that I'm doing that is because of Catholic radio. And I just started listening in my car, and over time I thought, boy, I really got to check this thing out fully. But the other reason I started doing it was the beauty of the church. And as somebody who was raised Protestant, I'm only 35, one of the things that amazed and astounded me was that every time I was exposed to Catholicism, the beauty of her liturgy, her art, her music, spoke to my soul in a way that nothing I'd ever encountered in Protestant church did. Mm. And I was reading a book by Father Thomas White, and he was talking about how when philosophers or even mathematicians look for truth, one of the things they look for is beauty.
Yeah.
One of the characteristics of truth is beauty. And I listened to some of the conversation that we're having here today, and I'm grateful that we're all grappling with this, but when I hear some Catholics or some people who kind of don't get the Latin Mass or don't get some of this other stuff, it just makes my heart cry out because of the beauty that's there that God wants to use to draw us closer to himself.
Wow.
So I just wanted to share as somebody who's converting, boy, the beauty of the church is important.
What a beautiful call. Thank you for those comments.
Amen.
You got anything? Just an amen, Liz?
I think he said it all.
Boy, he did. It's inspiring.
His testimony is is not uncommon, I would say, that the depth of the beauty of the church, it's like it tackles the heart and takes hold. It's a very powerful vehicle for conversion, and we're so glad to have you in RCIA, Tyler.
Thank you. Have a lovely evening.
You too, Tyler. Thank you. It's so interesting because some of the Catholic, especially music and chant and those kinds of things that are more traditional, they are an avenue for people to make fun of us as Catholics. Like if you're going to make fun of a Catholic, you know, you kind of put your hands together and tilt your head like you're a holy card or something. But that doesn't mean they're not powerful. It doesn't mean that music and what the church looks like and what the liturgy feels like to a person isn't very, very important.
Well, and we are created to know the truth. We have been created by God with the capacity to be drawn to recognize the truth. And so even if we're not particularly well formed, you know, our soul has that capacity and is always looking for the truth. Nobody wants a lie. Nobody says, I am out to lie to myself. You know, we're always looking for the truth. It's how we're oriented. And so it's no surprise to me that a soul would respond in the way that Tyler's has.
Again, Tyler, thank you very much for those just really encouraging comments. We appreciate it very much. Let's go to Stuart in Fort Wayne, Indiana, listening on Redeemer Radio. Stuart, your question or comment for Elizabeth Kelly.
Okay. Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to, first of all, I have a comment. I grew up in the Roman Catholic tradition, and more I saw in the 70s and 80s and even into the 90s, beauty seemed to diminish, at least on the local level, more and more insipid music and so forth. And I found myself drawn to the Eastern Catholic Church. I now belong to the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church, and I find that young people, even in our parish, we have a very small parish, we're a mission parish, and so we don't have the whole kit and caboodle, the iconostasis or anything like that. We're worshiping in borrowed space in a Roman Catholic chapel. We put up icons as we can for liturgy, but even then, I even see the young people, they are engaged in the liturgy. They are entranced and engaged in the beauty of the singing. We sing almost an entire liturgy. And the icons that we do have and everything. And I'm wondering if Elizabeth thinks that if we were to as a whole church, as a church, the Roman churches, if they would return to, I mean, many are trying, many are doing this, but if they were to return to including more and more beauty in the liturgy, and if that would maybe be more of a key of holding on to the youth and to people in general.
Okay, Elizabeth?
You know, I think you're onto something in that, you know, children know when they're being snowed. They know when they're being lied to. We think of them as very innocent. We can tell them anything and they'll believe it. But I think especially in the liturgy, what you are expressing, observing in the youth of your parish is precisely that. I think that, you know, again, the soul is designed to seek God, to seek the truth, to seek goodness and beauty. And there's something in us that kind of goes ding, 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 you know, when we have an encounter with something that is real versus something that's much more superficial. And I do think that there are a great number of churches that are trying to draw on more traditional expressions in the Mass, and that young people are just eating it up. You know, as I say here, at our local seminary, they have Cor Jesu. It's an hour of adoration and praise and worship music and Gregorian chant and all of this on Friday nights. They're probably doing it right now. And they do sort of a combination of some of the praise and worship for the younger crowd, but then some of the more traditional hymns. And it just seems to be capturing the hearts of the young people.
Stuart, thank you very, very much for the call. Lots of folks on the line, so I want to try to keep moving here. Let us go to Chris in Berkeley, California, listening to EWTN on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Chris, your question for Elizabeth.
Hi, you guys. Thank you very much for this program. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
EWTN and Catholic Answers played a big role in my conversion from Anglicanism to Catholicism a few years ago.
Oh, thanks for sharing that with us, Chris. So,
yeah, I really appreciate what you guys do. So I grew up as a boy chorister in the Episcopal Church. And beauty made me a Christian because I couldn't sing that music that we sang in the Episcopal Church, thanks in large part to Blessed Cardinal Newman and his work when he was still an Anglican. And in getting the reinvigoration of the ancient Anglican traditions, which are really basically Catholic, going with the Oxford movement in the early 19th century. And part of that, a huge part of that, was bringing back choirs of boys and men, which in the Catholic Church were the farm leagues that generated both the great church musicians, essentially all the Western musicians and composers, started out as boy choristers in Catholic churches, and later in, you know, Anglican and Lutheran churches that kept up that tradition. So, and also very many clerics and monastics started out that way.
Chris, we're coming to the top of the hour. I'm really enjoying your comments, but we're coming to the top of the hour.
All right. So my question, my basic question is, how come this tradition was abandoned in the Roman Catholic Church? And specifically, and more to the point, how come we never hear sacred music on Catholic radio? We hear this commercial stuff, you know, Muzak.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sorry. I interrupted you, but we got to get to the question. So what happened to Gregorian chant?
You're asking me. Yeah. well, oh gosh, that's a very complicated history, but it's alive and well and thriving, I can say that. As to why it's not on Catholic radio, I don't know. Is there a Sirius FM Gregorian chant station, maybe?
Well,
I don't know.
there are mostly, like, I know that there are Catholic radio networks who have internet, apps and things where you can go to get the Gregorian chant. But, I mean, I'd also, in fairness, it wasn't written for AM radio. And that might not always be the place for it. I'm sorry, Chris, we didn't get to give you a fuller answer. Elizabeth Kelly, thank you for a very, very fine hour.
My pleasure. Anytime.
You can find out all about Elizabeth Kelly and what she does at lizk.org. And look into that Bible study for women. Women who encountered Jesus in the New Testament. And how they can be helpful presences for you. Next hour, open forum for the young set. Kids only with Jimmy Akin.